Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around St. Albans and from further afield. I suppose if there's a theme to this week's show, it's valuing the natural world, appreciating what's there around us, not taking it for granted, and making sure that other people can see that value too before it's too late. So coming up later, what are those tags that attach to some trees in the city centre? But first, if you're anything like me, you probably didn't think that Hertfordshire even needed a minerals plan. Surely they apply to places with coal mines like Derbyshire, or tin mines like those we see down in Cornwall on Poldark, perhaps. Well, Hertfordshire does need a minerals plan because there's a lot of mining that goes on here. Remember the sinkhole caused by historic clay extraction? Well, now it's more gravel and sand that we're mining. Huge quantities. And of course, huge mines can have huge impacts on the environment. The latest draft of the Hertfordshire Minerals Plan has just opened for consultation, and local ecologist Joe Gray is concerned about the effect that it will have on local wildlife. So, Joe, thank you very much indeed for joining me. Now, the Hertfordshire Minerals Plan proposes three local sites for gravel extraction. Where are they?
So, one of the main sites is what's called Ellenbrook Fields, or Hatfield Aerodrome, which is the old de Havilland site. It's near the Three Horseshoes pub in Smallford, northeast from there. And the other sites are at the existing Hatfield Quarry, which is off Cooper's Green Lane, so northeast from there, north of Hatfield, and an extension of Hatfield Quarry. So it's, with the exception of one other site in the plan, it's very concentrated in that area of the county.
And how much gravel are we talking about here?
I think they're looking to get out about 25 million tonnes over a 15-20 year period. So it is a significant amount of extraction.
Okay. I mean, we have to face it that we do need lots of gravel for concrete, for things like all the new houses that we need to build. Why shouldn't we get it from sites like Ellenbrook Fields?
So I think it's a good opportunity to mention what goes into the big pit that they're going to dig, or the seven big pits at Ellenbrook Fields. It's a whole lot of building waste. It's materials that were used in building rubble that's going to go back into the ground. We generate about 2 million tonnes a year in Hertfordshire. We also import 1 million tonnes a year from London. So yes, if we have an economic mindset whereby the idea of circular economy just isn't there, and we'll just keep on burying our old rubbish and digging up new fresh stuff, then yes, you could say, okay, it has to come from somewhere. As it happens, I also think it's actually a rather nice wildlife site. It doesn't have any designation that protects it itself, although there is a local wildlife site immediately abutting where the main concrete processing and aggregate processing is planned, and that's some very old woodland. It doesn't have a designation, but that's not to say it isn't incredibly important for wildlife at the moment.
Is there anything in particular that you'd find there? Anything that of particular value?
So I spent the last week, since the consultations opened on this, talking to various people I know about it, and the bird watchers say it's very good for a number of quite rare bird species, especially some migrating birds that are coming over and very from Africa, very hungry, and they're enjoying the scrubby areas that exist on the site because they're very sort of berry rich in the winter.
Yeah.
It's also really important for certain invertebrates, again particularly associated with the scrubby more scrubby areas of the site. So I mean, some ecological surveying work has been done. I've read the reports. Unfortunately, I think they're both a bit out of date already, and that they're missing key species. I spoke to a botanist yesterday, someone who goes around recording wildflowers, and he tells me that it's a site where heath dog violet is found. And to put that into context, there's probably only two other sites in the whole county where that's found, and it indicates a really important area of acidic heathy grassland. And that's just completely overlooked. It's not been found by the surveyors. So things like this trouble me.
Right, OK. I mean, gravel extraction companies, they do pay a lot of attention to reinstating areas in good condition when they have extracted gravel. And there are places like Panshanger where old gravel pits have actually become nature hotspots. you know, there's obviously things of value there now, but actually couldn't there be after the extraction has taken place?
So they have a plan to restore it, which I think they're sort of legally obliged to do. And the claims in the plans and the associated planning application that exists for the quarry that they're going to be seeking to deliver positive change in biodiversity over the site. So a couple of things to say about that. I think that the methods that exist to quantify that are rather limited. They don't account for quite a lot of the smaller things. So they might be, you know, they're going to have to destroy a badger set and they'll be building an artificial badger set to replace it. They'll be digging some ponds for the great crested newts that are known from the site to hopefully be moved to. But there's a lot of smaller things either aren't known or aren't really given due consideration. So yes, it will, it, you know, in 80, 100 years time, it might actually look quite nice and start to regain some of the complexity that's going to be lost by this process. But wildlife, you know, it can't wait 80 or 100 years. It's feeling an incredible amount of pressure in the county at the moment, not just because of this, but new housing. And so for me, as a wildlife lover, I find a great sadness in any area that's additionally going to be lost to what we already know is going to be lost.
Okay. Now, I mean, the Minerals Plan, it's quite a long way down the road to being finalised. I hear what you say, but really, is there anything that can be done at this stage?
Yeah, so the consultation opened earlier in January. And it's open till March the 22nd, and it can be challenged on the grounds of soundness. There's four criteria for that. The one I think is most interesting is that it has to be in line with relevant national policy. One of the key documents is called the National Planning Policy Framework, which is a government published document from July 2018. And that goes into quite a lot of detail about all the things that need to be done for wildlife and other issues such as mental health and well-being, because obviously we're going to be losing recreational area to a certain extent. So I think it can be challenged on these grounds. I don't think they're doing enough to follow the guidance in the National Planning Policy Framework. And so I certainly will be challenging it in a personal response to the consultation.
Okay, and if other people agree with you, how do they object? How do they find out where they can make their objection?
So it's a bit hidden away, but I think I've been testing a few ways to get to it. The URL for it is rather unwieldy, so I think the best thing to do is to pick your internet search engine of choice and type in the following six words: Hertfordshire Minerals Local Plan Proposed Submission. That's Hertfordshire Minerals Local Plan Proposed Submission. And that will take you to a page that will guide you through the consultation process.
Joe, thank you very much indeed for that. And I was talking there to Joe Gray, a local ecologist. Now, if you've been in town over the last few days, you might have wondered what the tags are attached to some of the trees. Well, I spoke to local Green Party member Jill Mills to find out. So, Jill, explain to me, why have you and other Green Party members been attaching tags to city centre trees?
Well, we had this idea after we saw something similar in Canada. And we would like the public to be more aware of the real value of trees, not just their value for our health, community and so on, but they actually have a positive monetary value. And we'd like to show people that they should be thinking twice before they chop down mature trees.
So what exactly do trees do that we might not have considered?
Well, many people may not be aware that if you have a tree near your house, it cools your house in the summer. So, for example, it can bring the temperature down in your house by 7 degrees. So people who are operating fans in really hot weather, such as we're getting more of now, can really benefit from that. And conversely, in the winter, the break that trees provide against the wind can raise the temperature in your house, or rather reduce the amount of energy that you need to use. So it cuts 50% of the wind hitting the side walls of your house, and that can reduce your energy bill by a staggering 17%. So that's a really,
you know,
you can do the maths on that and make a saving.
So I can say, so it sounds like, I mean, could you really put a monetary value on a tree?
I think you could. If you start to add up the amount of money that the council is going to have to spend on trying to avoid having pollution in the town centre, and we discovered from research that trees take up to 60% of the particulates, that's the sticky bits that get into your lungs, and remove them, not just sticking to their leaves, but remove them by absorption of, in some cases. So that's money that the council would be spending on signage, creating low emission zones, although we are in favour of those as well.
Yeah. And I suppose also that's money that the NHS is spending on the ill effects.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in terms of the monetary return, so if you take into account all the things trees are doing, soaking up water, absorbing carbon, and then you look at all the duties that a council nowadays has to perform, they have targets for reducing carbon emissions in their areas. And so it's said that a mature tree will give you 66% back on your investment over 20 years. So that's pretty high. If that was on the FTSE 100 index, people would be buy trees.
Yeah, that's a sound investment, isn't it? So why don't we appreciate them enough, Jill?
I don't think people know enough. They take them for granted. And worse, they see their environment in terms of their bricks and mortar and its value. And we also know, for example, that houses that have mature trees near them have a higher value than houses in a similar circumstances without mature trees. There's a lot of research on that in several countries. So, you know, it is wrong to ignore the value of trees in a monetary way. But the reason we're focusing on the monetary value is to try and persuade the council to do more and recognise that actually there is a saving to be made. So it's win-win.
I was just going to say, Jill, isn't it a bit sad that it has to come down to money?
It is, but I think it's something that resonates with people. And I think if they, you know, recognise what trees do, then I think they would think twice about chopping them down.
That's something for us to think about. Jill, thank you very much indeed for sharing that with us. And I was talking there to Jill Mills of St Albans Greens. Now, of course, birds benefit massively from trees. And this weekend is the RSPB Big Garden Bird Watch. Dan from St Albans RSPB is particularly keen that you take part. So, Dan, just remind us what we have to do.
So, yes, the Big Garden Bird Watch, in essence, is very simple. Sit in your house and look at your garden for an hour on next weekend, Friday, Saturday or Sunday, and just record the birds that you see come into your bird feeders or just sitting in the trees around your garden.
OK, as simple as that, really.
It is.
I mean, the only birds that I see in my garden, there's a robin, a pigeon that comes for an occasional bath in our pond and our four chickens. Is there any point in me taking part?
There is. Even if you see no birds during that hour, that's still something that is worth recording. That's useful information. The whole Big Garden Bird Watch is a great example of citizen science, as it's known. People just observing birds that are around or even aren't around and feeding that information in. The amount of data that the RSPB has collected over 40 years now of the Big Garden Bird Watch is immense. 8 million birds were counted last year. And even if you've only got one bird to add to that this year, then that still counts.
Fantastic. So it's 40 years this year?
40 years, yes.
Wow.
40 years ago, Peter Holden was on Blue Peter asking young Ornithologist Club members to count their birds in the garden. And now it's really evolved into a massive venture that many thousands of people do each year.
That's fantastic. So looking at it more positively, rather than my garden that seems to have actually no birds, anything in particular that we might see around St Albans at the moment?
So if it's particularly cold next weekend, then it's maybe worth looking out for some of the winter thrushes. I've had redwings in my garden this year already, redwings and field fares that might turn up. There have been waxwings seen in Hart Hertfordshire this month, so that would be very special if you found one of those in your garden.
Oh,
but it's the special birds are nice, but even if they're common birds, those need to be counted as well.
Well, I'm feeling quite excited to go and watch just in case one of those arrives. That would be fantastic, a waxwing in my garden. Anyway, registration is online, but what if we're not quite so tech savvy?
So, of course, you can register online, but you can look online to download a form that you can fill in the information, or you can fill things in on paper and send off paper forms back to the RSPB. I think you can get hold of some forms. I think Burston Nurseries are doing a bit of a promotion on this, and I think they might have some paperwork that you could pick up as well.
Excellent. So really there's something for all levels of tech savviness there.
Yes.
And briefly, why is it so important?
I think it's important just to be able to see how birds are faring. The Big Garden Bird Watch has been able to track things that happened to greenfinches, for example, which really went down very, very low because of various diseases. And then there's been some action to help greenfinches, perhaps by encouraging people to clean their bird feeders so that diseases don't get passed on. Just keeping that annual track of birds and being able to respond if there's something specific that's going up or down is important. And we all love our garden birds, and we want to keep them flourishing.
Brilliant. Dan, thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome.
And I was talking there to Dan Fletcher of St Albans RSPB. So that's the Big Garden Bird Watch. But just a reminder that registration is open for the Big Schools Bird Watch until the 7th of February. So you've got a bit more time for that one. So if you're involved in a local school, that might be one for you. Now, St Albans RSPB are just one of the groups that have taken part in Sustainable St Albans Week, which is this year expanding into the Festival of Sustainability. Now, registration for events for this year is open just until the 31st of January. Any local group can run an event, and the event can be anything that makes the district a little bit more sustainable. So get your skates on, as I say, until the 31st of January to register online on the Sustainable St Albans Week website. And you can listen to me talking to Catherine Ross, who's chair of the organising committee, in a podcast at www.radioverulam.com/podcast, where you can listen to a whole range of fantastic Environment Matters and other Radio Verulam podcasts. Do follow me on Twitter at @RV_environment. Check us out on Facebook, or drop me a line at amanda@radioverulam.com. I'll be back at the same time next week. Until then, thank you for listening.